these days. A
trust
great deal.
Is the most important word. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being with us. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. This program is produced every day by myself, Dennis Bernstein, with associate producer Leslie Kane, contributing producer Robert Knight. Our technical directors are Mary Bishop and Ranjita Gisla. We had production assistance from Stephanie Hendricks. And for tape copy, check us out, 510-848-6767, extension 625. Check us out at the web, www.flashpoints.net. Thanks to John Lionheart, and thanks for listening.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. Coming up next, Queer Voices.
Excuse me.
Huh?
Have you read David Basavian's book, The Decline and Fall of Public Broadcasting? The foreword by Amy Goodman and an afterword by Mumia Abu-Jamal?
Huh?
Where he says, public broadcasting increasingly reflects the mentality of corporate America?
Huh?
He's written a bunch of books with the sharpest thinkers in the world. Chomsky, Edward Said, Iqbal Ahmad, Howard Zinn.
Yeah?
I'd sure like to meet him.
Never met him, huh?
I listened to his show on KPFT.
So why not meet him?
Huh?
At the Main Street Theater in my Chelsea Market on Thursday, March 27th at 8 p.m.
What?
He's going to talk and sign books.
Books?
Tons of books.
When?
Thursday, March 27th at 8 p.m. at Main Street Theater, Chelsea Market, benefiting KPFT.
Wait, is this one of those People for Progressive Radio things?
Shh. If I told you, everyone would want to know.
David Barsanian of Alternative Radio, Thursday, March 27th at 8 p.m. at Main Street Theater, Chelsea Market. For info, call KPFT at 713-526-4000.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. Now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valensky.
And I'm Jim Devlin.
And J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn is playing with the buttons back there, as he usually does.
You're going to say he was playing with something else.
No, I just got surprised by the levels buttons on your mic, Joan.
Sorry.
Well, we don't quite know what we're doing tonight. We're doing a bunch of different things because we didn't quite know whether we'd be on the air or whether we'd be partly preempted or whatever.
Well, let's correct that. We don't know what we're doing except for J.D. J.D. knows exactly what he's doing, so
right.
Tell us about it.
Well, I would normally say the second hour is Queer Music Heritage, but we're going to change that a little bit because at 9 o'clock we're going to run some BBC News, so we're going to start QMH. A little before the hour, about 12 minutes or 13 minutes before, and then finish it after the news.
Right, in case you don't know that J.D. does plan his stuff way far in advance, so he usually gives us an hour's program on CD.
Yeah, unlike George Bush and his attack on Iraq, he didn't plan that far enough in advance, so he interrupted QMH.
He did it with me.
I know. What is his problem?
Well, and a number of things that's happened on in the community, including the Oscars were pretty interesting yesterday. So Bowling for Columbine, the winner.
Oh, yeah, Michael Moore goes.
And a number of other things are going on.
I saw the Gay Men's Chorus thing yesterday. It was very good.
Ooh, that's high praise coming from J.D.
And yeah, that's not normally my type of music, but the finale number, Oliver Button is a Sissy, was wonderful.
There was a review in the Chronicle
yes.
that says, you know, and in a sense, they didn't quite say it this way, but basically it's time for them to come out of the ghetto and be considered one of the major
yes.
art type of organizations yes. within the city, which is pretty
and,
neat.
And the young man that played Oliver, it would be very easy to go over the top or be mocking when you're playing a sissy to overdo it. He didn't. He did it just right.
Oh, that's a cute little book. That is a really cute little book.
So we are also going to be doing This Way Out in this hour, and we will start with the first segment, which is News Wrap.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Ralph Radebaugh.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 22nd, 2003. As Britain joined the U.S. in attacking Iraq this week, the U.K.'s Ministry of Defense announced that for the first time, it will be extending spousal survivor benefits to the partners of its unmarried service members who may die there, including gay and lesbian partners. British law currently restricts military pensions to legally married spouses, something several members of Parliament have already been working to amend. But the ministry has the authority to change the benefits regulations without legislation, and the heterosexual domestic partner of one service member who died in action had already won a settlement in her high-profile campaign for a military pension.
The new eligibility of partners is not identical to that of legally married spouses, according to the ministry's written statement to the Parliament. While spouses enjoy their benefits automatically, for partners, the ministry will make what it called a broad assessment of the substance of the relationship in each case. The assessment will consider such factors as duration, the partner being named in the service member's will, financial interdependence, shared commitments such as joint mortgages, and children, although not all of these are necessary to qualify. Those who are deemed to have had a substantial relationship with a service member who died in a conflict will receive an initial lump sum followed by regular payments, but are apt to be in amounts about 10% less than those received by legal spouses. Partner eligibility begins with the war on Iraq and is not retroactive.
Meanwhile, all that's available to U.S. gay and lesbian service members in Iraq is the option to name a partner as what's called a person of interest to be notified if they die. Even that's risky, as the so-called don't ask, don't tell policy remains in effect, with so-called gay discharges and military cases of homophobic harassment both having reached record highs in 2001, the latest year for which figures are available. The attack on Iraq marked the first time the U.S. military specifically excluded proceedings on gay discharges from its stop-loss orders, which halted other administrative actions so as to keep troops available for action.
Numerous gay and lesbian individuals and organizations have been prominent among those protesting the war in Western nations. In fact, one U.S. internet poll suggested that lesbi-gays and transgenders may be more likely than their heterosexual counterparts to oppose it.
Last week, Britain's best-known gay rights activist, Peter Tatchell, was arrested after jumping in front of Prime Minister Tony Blair's car to protest Western military intervention against Iraq. Tatchell, who was quickly bailed out, believes Saddam Hussein should be deposed by means of support for dissident Iraqi Kurds.
In one protest this week, the Spanish gay rights group Colegas publicly called on the Pope to excommunicate Spanish Prime Minister José María Aznar and his entire ruling Partido Popular from the Roman Catholic Church. The Pope has repeatedly called for peace, while the Spanish government has been a leader in supporting U.S. military action against Iraq. However, the Church and Partido Popular agree in their opposition to legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples, with the PP having recently blocked a registered partnership bill introduced by all of Spain's other parliamentary parties.
And Mexico City's first ever lesbian march this week turned into an anti-war demonstration. Lesbian feminist organizers had previously announced it would proclaim their need for autonomous spaces that do not compromise our ethics in the construction of a society that is critical of heterosexism, neoliberalism, and other fundamentalisms. But as some 500 participants marched down the city's main streets, they joined their voices with dozens of anti-war protesters holding vigil outside the U.S. Embassy.
Meanwhile, a lawsuit credited for the South African National Defense Force's recent extension of spousal benefits to service members, same-gender partners, was reaffirmed by the nation's highest court this week. South Africa's Constitutional Court last year determined that a law restricting judges' survivor benefits to legally married spouses violated the constitutional guarantee of equality for gays and lesbians. The decision was seen as a landmark for partner rights, especially for civil servants, and led to the change in military policy. But by the time that judgment was handed down, the law in question had been replaced by another which also recognized only marital partners. So openly lesbian High Court Judge Kathy Satchwell went back to court seeking benefits for her partner. And this week, the Constitutional Court again declared that permanent life partners must have equal treatment. Satchwell's attorney, Raymond Tucker, interprets the ruling as referring to relationships of some length or some kind of mutual support agreement, noting that with a marriage, there is an automatic mutual support assumption that does not occur in gay relationships because they might have chosen to exclude that obligation. Despite a number of court rulings and urgings from judges, South Africa's legislature has yet to act on formalizing legal recognition of same-gender couples.
But a number of U.S. state legislatures continue to take up bills affecting gays and lesbians. New Mexico's legislature took final action this week on two bills, sending them on to Governor Bill Richardson, who's promised to sign them into law. One will prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in employment, housing, public accommodations, and credit. This week, the state Senate, which had previously passed its own version of the measure by a narrow margin, passed the House version by a vote of 22-20. The other bill would increase sentences for bias-motivated crimes, including those against lesbian, gays, and transgenders. This week, the Senate version won approval from 60% of the state House, which had previously passed its own version. Also late last week, the Democrat-controlled New Mexico House revived a bill to require insurers to make coverage available for domestic partners in group health insurance plans to those employers who want to provide it. The bill, which the governor supports but previously failed in a tie vote on a day of poor attendance, now passed the House 33-30.
The Washington State House, also controlled by Democrats, this week gave almost 60% approval to a bill to prohibit sexual orientation discrimination in employment, housing, and financial transactions. Although the Washington House has passed similar bills twice before, it will once again face an uphill battle in the Republican-controlled state Senate.
In Minnesota, which was among the first of the 13 U.S. states to enact a law protecting gay and lesbian civil rights, a controversial move to repeal those protections may be dead for the session as its Senate sponsor withdrew it this week. Republican leaders in the state House have already said they won't give a hearing to its companion bill there.
Maryland State House this week passed by a landslide 2-1 margin a bill to add homophobic attacks to the state's hate crimes law. Its sponsor, openly gay delegate Richard Medaleno, is confident that the Maryland Senate will follow suit.
A member of the Finnish Parliament issued an open letter of apology this week after lesbian baiting his nation's president. Former professional boxer Tony Holm won the second largest number of votes of any candidate in this week's elections, even though his right-wing populist party, the True Finns, lost 15 of its 18 seats. When an interviewer on public radio asked him if he might form his own parliamentary group, Holm said, "We have a lesbian as president and me as parliamentarian. Everything seems possible." While it's true that President Tarja Halonen once chaired Finland's national gay and lesbian rights group, SETA, it's not true that she's a lesbian, and she's now married to her former domestic partner, a male. In addition to Holm's published apology, the radio broadcaster is investigating its airing of his remarks and has attributed it to a failure in internal routines.
And finally, the annual protest of the exclusion of gay and lesbian groups from New York City's massive St. Patrick's Day parade has become almost as much of a tradition as a venerable parade itself. Parade organizers, the Ancient Order of Hibernians, have law on their side, thanks to a past unanimous U.S. Supreme Court ruling regarding the exclusion of gays and lesbians from Boston's St. Patrick's Day parade. In its heyday, the New York protest resulted in more than 200 arrests, but this year's demonstration by the group Irish Queers involved only a dozen participants. Despite an unusual prop and four arrests, it went all but unreported by media. At a time of widespread U.S. police crackdowns on traffic blocking actions towards security from terrorism. At a major intersection on the parade route, the Irish Queers erected a 16-foot-tall tripod and slung one of their members from its peak. Police knocked over the tripod, dumping its occupant, and arrested three other demonstrators. They were released from custody more than 30 hours later, with a group charging violence and other misconduct by police.
Back on the old sod in Belfast, the 10th annual protest of the New York City exclusion by the Northern Ireland Gay Rights Association may have actually had more journalistic attention, despite being utterly peaceful and prop-free. That group picketed outside an office of New York Parade sponsor Aer Lingus, where NIGRA President P.A. McLaughlin told reporters, "Gay men and women can take part in St. Patrick's Day parades in Dublin, Cork, and Belfast, but they cannot in New York. The parade in New York has been multi-ethnic for years, but the Ancient Order of Hibernians in America bans gay people from the parade. This bigoted ban is long since out of date."
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 22nd, 2003. Written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Ralph Radabaugh.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, this is going to be a very exciting week in our community. And, you know, we like to focus on local things here because God knows nobody else does.
Right.
You know, everybody is on the war. You know, even the local stations, local, even the new 24-hour Houston channel, news channel cable, they're doing weather forecasts for Iraq. Well, we don't have a correspondent over there. And if we did, we wouldn't pick up the phone anyway. This week in the Supreme Court, the arguments are going to be for the Lawrence versus the state of Texas, right?
Yeah, Lawrence versus
State Texas. Of Texas. Happening Wednesday, and hopefully there will be some coverage on NPR, because Nina Totenberg does great stuff.
Do they just hear it one day, or do they, you know?
Well, they've been already arguing if this is one of the actual oral arguments. And I think
that's one day?
One day, yes. Because, and then we should hopefully hear for the decision sometime before June or late June.
For Pride Day.
Pride Week.
That would be just too much, and if, especially if it's positive. You just never, you know, we all expect it to be positive, but so we also all expected Bowers to be positive, and it wasn't. So, and if you want to find out about that afterwards, on After Hours, John Neckman is going to be speaking about that, because he's going up there to be sitting in there in the Supreme Court, and he'll be talking about it After Hours, which starts at 1 a.m. on Sunday morning, if it's not preempted because of the war, but hopefully it won't be.
Can you arrange that, Jimmy?
I'll try my best.
So that's happening. What else is happening? I mean, spring is coming up. Bunny party's coming up in April.
That's right. The bunny party's coming up in April. We have got some authors that will be appearing here over the next couple of weeks.
On the phone.
On the phone, not appearing physically. Unfortunately for JD, for one of them, because he thinks he's cute.
Oh, he is.
We will have Brent Hartsinger, who is the author of The Geography Club, which is reviewed this week in The Triangle. Very, very good book about a young man who starts a gay-straight alliance at his school but calls it The Geography Club because he doesn't want people to know what the real purpose of it is.
You've got to be invited.
Yeah. Well, what he wants is he wants to create a club that sounds so totally boring nobody else will join it, you know. And it's just, it's a very, very good book, very timely. The other book is The V Book by Elizabeth Stewart. And all you gay men, you might want to just turn off your radios that night because I think you can guess what V stands for. JD's over here putting his hands over his ears. The Gay Spirit Warrior author Jim Finney will be on April 7th, and they are doing a book signing in Austin on April 10th.
Well, Joan, you wrote a very interesting article in The Triangle, and I know I'm a little too close to the story.
Yeah, you were quoted in
a couple times, right. But basically, it talks about that John Flores wants to bring back the Westheimer Street Festival.
John Flores is bringing back the Westheimer Street Festival.
They can't do anything about it.
Well, that's not necessarily totally true, and we don't know yet. There are some things working on behind it, but John Flores wants to bring the Westheimer Street Festival back into the community, into Westheimer, on the day, the weekend of the parade.
That's right, the 28th and the 29th of June.
Right, in the official stance of the Pride Committee saying there's 51 other weeks you can do it. Why is he doing it that weekend?
So our sanitation cleanup would clean up after him, too.
Well, you know, all of that is sort of felt. And Joan, you actually did speak to John on this issue, so that we're just not covering one side of this issue.
Right. Now, his feeling is that the festivals can work together, that they're complementary to each other. He doesn't think he's going to interfere with the parade because his event will take place during the day, and of course the Pride Parade takes place at night. He feels like it'll be attracting the same type of crowd. So okay. He basically, you know, he kind of looks at it as a win-win. And he says he does have the support of some people in the community who've told him they also think it's a good idea.
And the Pride Committee doesn't feel that way. The Pride Committee...
Well, the neighborhood associations do not either.
Right. The neighborhood associations even feel more strongly that he shouldn't be able to come back. Because number one is that the streets are not cleaned up after his festival. That he is not getting a city... He's not even applying for a city permit to do this. Consequently, the police will have to be on overtime, whereas in the Pride Committee, we get a permit and we pay for that permit.
You also work pretty well with the neighborhood
association. We work with the neighborhood association. We work with the city. In fact, our contact with the city, who we usually have a meeting with every year, says there's no need for us to even have a meeting because everything goes so well. There's also talk about some of the neighborhood associations wanting to put up parking signs, which will just make it worse for everybody because people will park there anyway because they're used to parking there and get towed.
Well, what about the Pride volunteers? Because as you've told us and as everybody who's ever volunteered for Pride knows, and if you've never volunteered for Pride, please do so you'll know too. You start at 8 o'clock that morning. I mean, you know, Pride doesn't, you know, it's not like everybody shows up at 8:30 and the parade goes forward at 9. You know, you've got people doing floats, working on floats, some of them from, like I said, first thing in the morning. The Pride committee is out marking, you know, putting up stakes and stuff to let people know where to park, organizing everything, checking everything out. I mean, I did that one year. That's hard, hard work, and it is an all-day event. And it's going to be made even more difficult if, you know, Westheimer is barricaded, you know, with these people in the street.
And John has been quoted that, you know, he knows he won't apply for the permits because he won't get permits, so it's not the city's problem, and the city's expense are going to have to pay for it. And
He should have one every week then.
Yeah, well, so that, you know, it's just not my words coming out here. You should check on Texas Triangle, txtriangle.com, and read Joan's story, or read the story that's in the Chronicle a week ago Saturday that wrote about this, or get a hold of the Neartown Association. They got volumes on how they did all their work and all the complaints that they had over the Westheimer Street Festival. I love festivals, and I even think that, in fact, I was taught, we had a meeting in East Parker's office today. But and I don't think the neighborhood associations are against festivals per se, because the Greek festival happens here. I believe St. Anne's has a Mediterranean festival. And there's other things that happen in this community that there aren't, you know, a lot of complaints about. I mean, we have St. Patrick's Day here. Griff's has, you know, people parking all over. You know, the neighborhood associations are not after those particular events to get them out of the community, because they realize this is a funky community. They want this stuff. I've always used to love the Westheimer Street Festival until it got to be totally out of control. And, you know, it's just not, you know, it's not fun anymore. It's not fun if you live in the neighborhood. That's my opinion. I know everybody has different opinions on that.
Well, one of the, you know, my concern is because one of the, actually the person I talked to that's involved with the Neartown Association, his exact words were, we're not anti-festival, we're anti-that festival. But what I'm also concerned about is the, at the end of the article, I quoted him, he told me that, you know, the neighborhoods work so hard to stop this festival that, you know, they're pretty much going to do whatever it takes to stop it. And, you know, that's a scary thought, because the last thing you want is, you know, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I'm saying, you know, the potential is there for some clashes, some conflicts, you know, some very bad things to happen. And, you know, and you know, John Flores has a point. You know, his point is, if I want to have a party in my yard, I should be allowed to have a party in my yard. And if my yard happens to be on Westheimer at Montrose, well, that's not, you know, somebody else can rent the house if they don't like it. But at the same time, the crowds that are going to be drawn, the tension that's been caused, the past history, you know, there's real potential for disaster there. And all of this happening within hours, even possibly minutes, of the Pride Parade. I mean, you know, if there's an incident, shall we say, at 6:30, 7 o'clock on Saturday night, who's to say that it's all going to be cleared up by 8:30, 9 o'clock, when we're ready to roll?
What blocks do the, quote, festival run?
Westheimer and Montrose.
The festival is supposedly going to happen on some private property in front of the Blockbuster, where the Blockbuster Center is, which is on Westheimer and Montrose.
That's where people are lining up, you know, hours before to park for the parade.
Yeah, John Flores also has a private lot about the 500 block of Westheimer, and there's probably another bar or two along Westheimer that will, you know, curtain off their private parking lot for the festival.
Yeah. You know, and there's a part of me that would love to go, because I think it would be fun. And I'm certainly no fan of the associations. I'm probably more anti-association than most people. But I could also, I can see both sides of it. I can see the potential for it really hurting the parade. But I can also see their point in that, you know, if it's their property and they want to have a party,
they have 51 other weekends in the year to do it.
I agree, but, you know, they, at the same time, you know, it's, if it's his property.
Okay, well, let's listen to a segment of This Way Out.
Opera lovers are so familiar with the story of La Traviata that it's hard to imagine the shock that the show originally carried. A new translation is changing that by bringing in contemporary issues of sexual orientation, gender identity, and AIDS. This Way Out correspondent Christine Taylor reports from Taos, New Mexico.
In a little one, the night will end. It is time I must be going. Many thanks to you, dear lady, for a most delightful time.
People would ask me, what does La Traviata mean? What does it mean? You know, and it's literally translated as the misguided one. But I think that, you know, literal translations aren't always it, because people use language idiomatically. And I think more accurately, it is the tainted one. The tainted one. Someone who has slipped outside the acceptable bounds of their society.
When La Traviata was written in 1853, the subject matter certainly was outside the acceptable bounds of society. The story was so shocking to audiences, a courtesan living with her lover and dying of tuberculosis, that the theater where the opera debuted insisted the opera's time period be moved back 200 years. But as times have changed, audiences are less and less able to relate to the situations in La Traviata, let alone be shocked by them.
A man and a woman living together out of wedlock, whether you approve of it or disapprove of it, no longer surprises anyone at all. And we don't really relate to the fact that tuberculosis was the kind of killer that it was. So it's changed a great deal and become just a costume drama to us.
Specifically written to address today's audience, a new translation of La Traviata by Taos resident Kristen Wolfe looks to restore some of the relevance and punch that the opera originally carried.
I wanted to get back the original bite of the libretto and put in my changes as well.
Some of those changes include translating the libretto to English, making the opera more conducive to production by small companies by staging it in a concert setting, adding one actress who moves the story along, and most importantly, making the heroine Violetta a transsexual who is living with AIDS.
That is the world that still experiences such incredible prejudice in the modern day. And of course, the disease that we associate the modern plague is AIDS. You know, the story isn't really about her dying. The story is really about her incredible nobility, which is obscured by the fact that she lives a very on-the-edge life.
Noble, that's what he called me. But it was really clear. My kind, transsexual. You didn't know, did you? My kind could never have a place in his world.
The source of the opera's conflict comes from Violetta's transsexual lifestyle and her disease, but does Wolf feel that if Violetta had been part of any other targeted group, the translation would have carried the same weight?
Well, I've not thought it through, but I think so. I think, for example, if there was a racial conflict, however prejudice and the cruelty and the bigotry and the violence against gay people has been certainly more evident in my life than other kinds of social discrimination. And that's a large part of what I wanted to highlight and to bring out.
What will you do when you are ugly and ravaged, and his attention wanders, and you are an outcast? Do you know what that means? Oh, yes, I know. God may forgive, but people never will.
I had a number of young friends who were coming out to their families. This was years ago. And they just struck me as such heroes. They were taking their most essential nature and presenting it in a way that they had every reason to expect might be met with a great deal of anger and resistance. And their desire for freedom and to live the life that they chose and to be who they were was very strong. And I think that's a powerful human theme.
So what would it take for this version of La Traviata to become so mainstream that it would be, in effect, just another costume drama?
We would have to reach the point where people's sexual preferences and lifestyles were simply not anybody else's concern, and no one would care. And then my translation would be no more punchy or relevant than this woman who was sexually active outside of marriage and had tuberculosis.
How far are we from that?
Oh, I don't know. I hope not too far. That would be lovely. I like to think that.
How shall I find the courage?
I've been talking with Kristen Wolfe in Taos, New Mexico. I'm Christine Taylor.
This is Terry Sweeney as Nancy Reagan. You know, whenever I'm home alone at the ranch and Ronnie's asleep, I listen to This Way Out, I mean, they get down and dirty, and that's the way I like it. Oh, so wonderful.
This is Queer Voices.
Singer, songwriter, actor, and poet Rod McEwen was a voice for peace and social justice throughout the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Perhaps best known for his songs Seasons in the Sun and Jean, in his work and in his activism, McEwen has always championed gay rights. His books have sold 75 million copies worldwide, and he's recorded over 200 albums, 67 of which went platinum. But in 1982, he suffered from a bout of depression and withdrew himself from the public scene. McEwen returned on March 19, 2003 to announce a new concert tour. It was an extraordinary Hollywood party to celebrate a man of peace on a night of war. This Way Out's Steve Pride was there.
In 1950, Rod McEwen coined the phrase, "Make love, not war," and it became a rallying cry for both the Korean and Vietnam conflicts. So it is oddly serendipitous that on the night another war is launched, I find myself attending a party for McEwen. Just as our interview was to begin, McEwen has been whisked back outside to face the paparazzi. But the night is young, and there's a handsome man at the bar.
Harry Hamlin. Well, I tell you, you know, when I was in college and before, Rod McEwen was my hero, and still is, but he set the tone for much of my formative years. Yeah, absolutely.
My name is Dom DeLuise, and I'm here with my son, Michael. Obviously, a lot of people have a giant amount of respect for Rod McEwen. He is the best. And we need more people like him now that the world is in such turmoil. The fact that we have a man who believes that tenderness is the way to live instead of what's going on today. I mean, it really is so scary. As we drove down here, we were very aware that the war was imminent.
I'm with Buddy Hackett. With everything that's going on right now, is this the perfect time for the return of Rod McEwen to the concert stage?
This I can't tell you. I know what we think going on in the world goes on all the time. It's just closer to home this time. But if we take the time to think of the people starving and the fact that China now has more than a million cases of AIDS, when last year they only had 100,000. It's just, if you don't write a little poetry, if you don't tell a few jokes, the thought of it will kill you.
Phyllis Dill is not just a fan of Rod McEwen, she's a good friend.
We've known each other for 50 years. When he was 18 years old, he was working at a radio station in the Bay Area where he had this very successful show. He was writing poetry, and he wrote every week, he wrote a whole new show. And I fell in love with him then, and I've been in love with him ever since.
This is This Way Out, which is a gay and lesbian show. Do you have a shout out to any of your gay and lesbian fans out there?
Well, yes. Live the great life and have a lot of fun.
Hi, this is Red Buttons. What did you want to know?
Rod McEwen. Why are you a fan of Rod McEwen?
I never heard of Rod McEwen. I just saw people coming to a party and I just jumped in.
And you are?
Sally Kirkland.
I've heard of you.
Oh, I hope so. 91 movies. Okay.
We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun.
We had, go on. Dun, da, 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 da. Tom, what are the rest of the words?
We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun.
Okay, in French.
Je m'appelle ton.
I am finally back with Rod McEwen. Rod, where have you been? And I don't mean tonight. I mean, you've been out of the public eye for a long time.
I have. I went through a clinical depression, and I don't know how to diagnose that. And so it was, in a way, it was kind of up to me. One morning I woke up and said to myself, what the hell do you have to be depressed about? And the answer was nothing. And so I got over it. That's about it. Well, it took me 10 years.
I grew up in Florida in the 1970s, and as I recall, you were one of the loudest voices raised against Anita Bryant. and her Save the Children campaign.
Don't drink the orange juice. I beg you, please. Don't drink the orange juice. Yeah, that was a long time ago. I don't like anyone who's against human rights, and I just thought what she was saying, the fact that nobody was replying to it and nobody was challenging her, was wrong. And so I'm a friend to anyone who's struggling for human rights.
That reminds me, you are also famous for a somewhat melancholy, but a really poignant song about being gay in the 1960s called The Ballad of the Sad Young Men.
I wish I'd written that. I didn't. I was the first person to record it, but that was written by Fran Lansman and Tommy Wolfe. They wrote it years before, but it wound up in a Broadway show that's called The Nervous Set. And they sent it to me, and I recorded it. I recorded it a couple times now. I love that song.
Think of the strides we've made in terms of gay rights.
Well, I think gay rights have made some progress, not enough. But I think it's like anything else. It's slow. I don't think blacks have made the kind of progress they should. I don't think women have made the kind of progress. I led the first Women's Liberation Day parade in Sydney, Australia. And those are, civil rights are really important to me. I'm going to be 70 next month, and I've been blessed with a wonderful life, and I've come up at a time when all kinds of changes were going on. I know that the kids of today are impatient. They have a right to be, but it'll all work out in the end. I think it will, because we're all human beings. Nothing more, nothing less. We're not angels. We're not desperados. We're human beings. We're not straight. We're not gay. We're not women. We're not men. We're people. We're human beings who need to be accorded the same rights and privileges as every other human being on the face of the earth. I'm surprised that so many of my old friends have come out on a night like this when I guess war has started. And I worry about us, you know, the old men of this country sending our children off to fight in battles. I don't want anyone to die on my behalf. I'm capable of doing that myself when the time comes.
Mr. McEwen, could I talk you into doing a reading of my favorite poem, Creed?
I can almost read it from memory, but not quite. I'm putting on my glasses. It doesn't matter who you love or how you love, but that you love. For in the end, the act of loving any man is the act of loving God. The good in men is all the God there is. And loving is a contribution to that good and to that only God. And I believe that with my heart.
There were a few questions I had that remain unanswered. I'm not sure if Rod McEwen is gay, straight, or bisexual. I'm also not sure that it matters. I am sure he is a good friend to our community, and his emergence from retirement returns a much-needed voice to the world stage. For his is a special gift that puts into words and music what we all are thinking and hoping and dreaming. Rod McEwen's Prime of Your Life concert tour begins April 30th at Carnegie Hall and will be followed by free events throughout the United States aimed at senior citizens. For more information, visit Rod's website at www.mcewen.com. This is Steve Pride in Hollywood. Thanks for listening.
I go to Florida a lot because the weather's always hot. There's pretty girls and pretty boys, as many Jews as there are goys, as many blacks as there are whites, as many days as there are nights, as many straights as there are gays. Yes, they have fun in lots of ways. Ah, oh, but
don't drink the orange juice, I beg you please.
Don't drink the orange juice,
I beg you please.
Don't drink the orange juice,
I beg you please.
Might lead to all kinds of bigotry. Miami Beach is pretty sand, as nice as lovely summer. The Cuban music is the top, at all the discotheques and hops. There's Hetty sailing in the Keys, and all the sharks are out to sea. Yes, Florida's a place to be, but won't you take a tip from me? Oh,
don't drink the orange juice,
don't drink the orange juice,
I beg you please.
Don't drink drink the orange juice. Biden eats a lot of kinds of bigotry.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Ralph Radabaugh, Graham Underhill, Fensberry, Rex Walker, Christine Taylor, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2ECR Eden, New South Wales, KOOP Austin, Texas, WTIP Grand Marais, Minnesota, and more than 135 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
And in case you didn't hear it earlier, This Way, or not This Way Out, but Queer Music Heritage is sort of going to be split up a little bit tonight because we have to play the BBC News at 9:01 through 9:06 to keep up with what's going on in the war. You know, of course, you can stay tuned to KPFT to know what's going on with all the events that are happening in Houston concerning the peace rallies and stuff like that, which you probably can't hear anywhere else or find out any other source of the media and stuff like that. I didn't go to the meeting that they had here in Houston with talking about the sodomy law challenge.
The town meeting?
Yeah. And it sounded like it was pretty interesting because there was articles. Actually, there was an article in the Chronicle today about it. So this is a very important case. And
it was on the front of the metro section.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, this is actually, you know, has potential to be a groundbreaking case because it could actually overturn Bowers versus Hardwick if the Supreme Court, there's two ways they can rule, well, two good ways. One good way would be just to make all sodomy laws that apply only to gay people illegal. The other way would be to actually reverse Bowers versus Hardwick, which would be optimum. I mean, that's really the one everybody's hoping for because that would just, I mean, that would just be great.
Well, in reality, Atlanta or Georgia, you know, knocked that law off the books anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it would also, but that's right, if it did it that way, it would really sort of erase those years since, I believe it was 1986, where basically were illegal.
The other thing is it would also keep people from being discriminated against on the basis that they're lawbreakers. Because
or,
that
or
is
people saying you can't have this gay-straight alliance in the school because you're illegal.
Yeah, you're promoting illegal activity,
right.
Which is what
or
Klein
you can't apply for
do.
This police force or whatever.
Or adopt children or be a foster mm-hmm. parent or anything like that.
There's so many ways it just permeates, you know.
Right. But, you know, I really want to see it overturned. I'll try not to gloat too much. But I really want to see it overturned. I can't wait. The glory of something like that is best realized the next day when you listen to conservative talk shows and hear them all
them.
Whining. It's just, it's music to your soul.
Well, it was interesting because I don't usually listen to conservative radio, but John Matthews was on talking about the gay-straight alliance in Klein. Was it Klein School?
Yes, it's Klein.
Where he says, well, we'll just get a bunch of people to join and just, you know, don't ever eat. And, you know, just the ignorance.
Well, you have to understand the things that are going on there. You know, yes, they won. They won their ruling. The school, you know, the group does go forward. But the school has started this policy where any club you belong to, you have to have a signed permission slip from your parents. You know, they have to put a disclaimer on any of their meeting posters and event announcements.
That's really a shame because if a kid's in the closet, he's not going to ask his parents
for permission. Well, duh. Why do you think they made that rule? You know, and like, you know, the attorney said, you know, Dan George said, you know, most kids, the school's probably not going to enforce whether or not the kids in the chess club have a permission slip from their parent, you know. And that's the whole point of it.
Unless they're queens.
Yeah.
Little chess joke.
Oh, God, JD. Stick to music.
Where's our writers?
Well, actually, one of our writers is GFN, the GayFinancialNetwork.com. They often have some good stuff, and there's an article on there today about partners of gay soldiers who have to bid farewell in secret. And it reads, when the love of his life prepared to leave home for deployment to the Middle East just days after Valentine's Day, JR, in quotes, packed a Bible, a rosary, and his St. Michael's medal, symbol of the patron saint of the warrior. We talked for over an hour that night, JR recalled. They also prayed and said their goodbyes behind closed doors. As families from across the nation traveled to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to hug and pray for their personal heroes from the 82nd Airborne, JR sat at home alone. He and his partner are gay, and the ban on openly gay soldiers in the military makes a teary goodbye an impossible task at the moment when, by all accounts, it is needed the most. Non-gay soldiers can talk about whom they miss back home. For gay soldiers, this is not an option because of the military's 10-year-old don't ask, don't tell policy, which prohibits gay and bisexual soldiers from saying anything which would reveal their sexuality. And so, as couples and families throughout America engage in a classic and often very public wartime separation ritual, gay soldiers show up for departure alone, sometimes forced to spin wild tales to explain the absence of significant others to bid them farewell. And JR, who insisted that his name not be used to protect his partner's identity, his partner was deployed to Kuwait in January. And he agreed recently to speak with researchers at the Center for the Study of Sexual Minorities in the Military, which is a think tank at the University of California, Santa Barbara, that studies gay troops, which says, although it's impossible to know how many gay soldiers currently serve in the U.S. military, there is a conservative estimate of something like 60,000.
Yes, and I'm sure if they were ever able to email or phone home, that stuff is all being listened to.
Well, that's something else that they mentioned in there, too, is that they've had to concoct cover stories and write letters very carefully.
I'm sure. Yeah.
We're going to go into the first part of J.D.'s...
Mm-hmm. It starts off with a world premiere of a song by Mark Weigel. Mark assured me I was the first one to play it.
Okay, and the second part is going to be after the BBC News at the top of the hour. This is Queer Voices.
And now for a Queer Music Heritage exclusive.
Can I turn to? You give me something I can hold on to. I know you think I'm like the others before. We saw your name and number on the wall. Jimmy, I got your number. I need to make you mine. You make me so happy. I tried to call you before, but I lost my nerve. I tried my imagination, but I was disturbed.
It's 6-7-5-3-0-9.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and I'm here on the fourth Monday of each month to bring you an hour devoted to our culture's music. I'm very pleased to have been able to open the show with a brand new song by Mark Weigel from his next album, which won't be released until late spring. The album will be called Different and the Same, and the song Jimmy is a cover version. It was originally called 867-5309 Jenny and was a hit for Tommy Two Tone in 1982, but I like Mark's version much better. The first feature on tonight's show will be a little different because instead of being about a particular artist, it's about a record label, a very mysterious record label. And it's a subject I've been meaning to cover ever since I started Queer Music Heritage over 3 years ago. The label was called Camp Records, and it is indeed mysterious because almost nothing is known about it. It was active in the early to mid-60s and was kind of an underground label. It was based in Los Angeles, but the only address given was a P.O. box in Hollywood. They released two albums and 1045s, and the artists singing most of the songs were uncredited, or with names obviously made up, like Bird E. Bath or B. Bubba. The first album was called The Queen Is in the Closet, and it was full of campy parodies, done with very stereotypical singing voices. Here's a song from it called The Weekend of a Hairdresser.
The steamboat is leaving mighty soon. It's going for a weekend, there's gonna be a full moon. Be sure to pack your perfume, your new bikini suit.
The time of year is ripe, my dear, I hear it's loaded with fruit.
Get on board from Fire Island, get on board right away, get on board from Fire Island.
I know it's gonna be gay.
When you get to that island, unpack your pretty things. They aren't very formal, don't wear your wedding rings. The cocktail hour is something, it really is the most.
You'll meet our dear old auntie, he's gonna be our host.
Get on board from Fire Island, make that trip right away. No one's called John or Harry.
They're known as Franny and Ray.
Just bring your springalators and your ponytail. Well, there's gonna be a big drag ball where you can really wail. Just sashay up the gangplank and join our little crew. And rush right to a porthole, you can watch the seagulls swoop.
The tunes are very festive, you'll romp and have a ball. The sounds you hear at night are nothing more than a mating call. When you get back to town, my dear, you'll have a brand new friend.
But if you don't make out this time, well then come back next weekend.
May I have this dance?
Yeah, baby, but you gotta leave.
Waltz faster, honey, they're playing a cha-cha.
Ace. The time has come for leaving, the hour to depart. You may have pleasant memories or just a broken heart. Next weekend may be better.
Oh, yeah!
So come and take a chance.
Sing the song, sing the song!
Hop right on that ferry. It'll take you to romance.
Hurry down to the landing. See you back at the pier. Leave your kids at the office. Pack up all your gear. Hurry down to the landing. See you back on the pier. We can all let our hair down. We'll see you Friday.
All aboard, all aboard.
Hey, watch your heels, May. You're stepping on my train.
What did you do to your hair? It looks like a wig.
It is a wig.
You'd never know it, see. Do you like my tiara? It's just like that princess. What's your name?
Grace, Grace.
Yes, Princess Grace.
That ain't no princess, honey. That's a queen.
Camp Records also released 10 singles on 45 RPM Records, and many had picture covers, again with stereotypical poses. The 45s are all very rare, and I've only got 8 of the 10. The first one was a parody of a popular TV commercial of the early 60s for Benson & Hedges cigarettes. The tagline of the commercial was, "I'd rather fight than switch." And if I'm remembering correctly, they often featured smokers with black eyes, proving that they would indeed fight before switching brands. But the Camp Records 45 took a twist on that, making it, "I'd rather fight than swish." And the 45 gave two versions of it. Here's about a minute of, "I'd rather fight than swish."
Thank you. gotta get me a leather jacket. I gotta get me a chain. I gotta get me a motorcycle. Man, I feel no pain. I'd rather fight than swish. I'd rather fight than swish. Give me some Nelly. I hit him in the belly. But when I see a queen, I get downright mean. Cause I am tough, rough, rough and hot stuff.
You get the idea. On the flip side of the 45 was the same song with different lyrics called I'd Rather Swish Than Fight. I prefer this version.
Oh, yes. That's a darling shade of lavender. No, I don't want to. Gotta get me some real tight britches. Gotta get me a date. Gotta be like those real wild bitches. And I can hardly wait. I'd rather swish than fight. I'd rather swish than fight. When I see a feller, I get kind of mellow. And if I see a guy, well, I just give him the eye. Cause I am gay.
Watch it, buddy.
Hooray! Gonna get me a real fine drag for the holiday ball. Got the prize right in the bag. Heels so high, I hope I don't fall. I'd rather swish than fight. I'd rather swish than fight. When I'm out a cruising, well, I just get to musing. If I see a stunner, I'm just gonna wanna. And why not? I mean, after all, I am gay.
Watch it, fella.
Shut up. Hooray. Perfect mate, or so at least I thought. But disaster was my fate. After what I caught, oh my dear, I was at that doctor forever and ever and ever. But that's a gamble that we take for our little worlds. Still we'll go on a risky fate, cause we're all just girls. Try again till I find me the one. I'm just like that any girl who had to get her gun. I'd rather swish than fight. I'd rather swish than fight. If you see me on the street, well, get lost, cause it's my beat. But if you should need a friend, I'll be yours until the end. You know it, sweetheart, cause I am gay.
Watch it, mister.
Oh, will you shut up? Hooray!
If you know a single guy, why don't you just send him by?
I'll be very kind to him. I'll satisfy his every whim.
You bet you.
Oh, watch yourself now. Cause I am gay. Whoopee, baby, and hooray.
Okay, buddy, what the hell are you staring at?
Well, you silly goose. Don't you know that open-toe shoes are passe with leather jackets?
The second part of J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage is coming up after BBC News at the top of the hour. This is Queer Voices.
This February 25th, KPFT completed its winter fund drive. Over 3,500 KPFT listeners responded, including more than 1,500 members new to the KPFT family, pledging over $350,000. KPFT would like to thank all our listeners who made this winterthon successful, dedicated phone volunteers, volunteer producers and hosts, restaurants that provided delicious meals, and above all, everyone who made a pledge to keep KPFT growing, especially at this crucial time in our history. Just a friendly reminder, if you made a pledge and haven't fulfilled it yet, please send your check when you receive your form. Your timely contribution will ensure that KPFT's 33rd year will be the best ever for your community radio station. To all who helped make this drive so successful, KPFT says thank you.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston.
Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky, Joan Devlin, and Glenn Holt.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Dating the local population.
This is the BBC in London. We'll begin the programme with the details on the day's developments.
BBC News with Michael Poles. American forces have launched heavy attacks on Iraqi soldiers protecting the capital Baghdad as the two sides prepare to do battle for the city. The Pentagon says helicopter gunships and aircraft have been used, in their words, to degrade a division of Iraq's powerful Republican Guards. Our correspondent in Baghdad, Paul Wood, says there's also been heavy bombing on the southern edge of the city. His words are being monitored by the Iraqi authorities.
From somewhere over the horizon to the south of Baghdad came a series of long, low, rumbling sounds, each lasting about 20 seconds, accompanied by flashes which lit up the whole sky. This was very different from the sound made by the impact of a single bomb or cruise missile. We concluded it was B-52s, probably dropping huge payloads of bombs on the Iraqi soldiers dug in on the outskirts of the capital, waiting to engage the advancing American and British forces.
Meanwhile, the Americans have continued to face fierce resistance from Iraqi troops. A BBC correspondent travelling with US Marines about 100 kilometres south of Baghdad says they're using artillery and aircraft against Iraqi forces thought to be several hundred strong. Further south, American forces are continuing to try to secure a route through the town of Nasiriyah. Our correspondent Gavin Hewitt is with US troops operating near the Nasiriyah front line.
One of the key bridges across the Euphrates is in American hands. The focus of the fighting is around the second bridge at the northern end of town. Some Iraqi prisoners have been taken. Some of the injured Iraqi soldiers have been treated by U.S. medics. The battle for Nasiriyah has delayed some units heading towards Baghdad. But I watched today the road north clogged with American armor and support vehicles. And the commander of coalition forces said today the progress north had been rapid and dramatic. They had reached Karbala, a town 60 miles south of Baghdad.
The commander of American-led forces in Iraq, General Tommy Franks, has said the forces under his command were making rapid and sometimes dramatic progress. He also said many Iraqis had been captured or had simply laid down their weapons and walked away. President Bush is preparing to ask Congress for nearly $75 billion to meet the cost of the war against Iraq and other extra security costs at home. The figure has been drawn on the assumption that the war will last for a month. The president is also asking for over $2.5 billion for humanitarian and reconstruction work in Iraq, but no money has been allocated for post-war peacekeeping. You're listening to the news from the BBC. The United Nations says tens of thousands of people face the threat of disease in the southern Iraqi city of Basra, where British forces are trying to overcome Iraqi opposition. Speaking from New York, the head of the UN's humanitarian effort in Iraq, Stephanie Bunker, said much of the population has no access to clean water.
Basically, what we've heard from the Red Cross, they report that the